That's what most everybody has decided, that is preconceived.
So basically, this is just another part of the cover-up of what we see, because we mustn't let the American people know. But, you know, it's amazing how many people defend the magic bullet. Well, of course it could happen, you know. It said right here in the book that it didn't matter that there were all the fragments that were left behind. We can understand it because the book said that was the way that it happened. Well, of course, you're just as I sort of entering the end of your career. And, you know, I'm sure when you were a young doctor, you sort of hated to stick your neck out, and you really would have endangered your entire future as far as getting your board.
Well, I think, really, it was paternal doctrine. I was not going to go against the group. I think I was naive. I felt that the president, even though they didn't do the autopsy at Parkland, would have the best that America could give. And I thought that the Warren Commission would be the best possible investigation. And I was career-minded. There's no question. I was a third-year resident. I wanted to stay in academic medicine. And as I said, John Peter Smith is the county hospital of Tarrant County, next in Fort Worth. And we rotated residents from Parkland through there, so I was not going to, say, cut off my nose to spite my face.
Well, I can certainly understand that, but I'm just so glad that you eventually, you know, did come out. What finally convinced you that you should tell the story?
The pictures, the autopsy photos that I had never appeared before the Warren Commission. I resented the chief of anesthesia asking everyone to write their account and hand them in to him, and then he was writing the paper for the Texas Medical Association. So I didn't do this. I thought it should be a surgical treatise. And so for that reason, I was not ever taken before the Warren Commission. It's interesting, when Oliver Stone came through, he read the Warren Commission, and I was mentioned 9 times in volume 6. And I was one of the ones that he asked to sign a release so he could do this. But the first JAMA articles came out and said that I was not even in the room.
Well, it's amazing how the cover-ups go. But
right.
Well, would you mind taking some calls if we have any calls after the next break?
Really?
All right, fine. Our telephone number is 464-8295. If you live here in Santa Cruz, if you're anywhere within the reach of our voice, our telephone number is 1-800-5-TALK-TO-YOU. That's 1-800-5-8255-28, which is 5-TALK-8255, and 2-U is 28. So if you'd like to call after our next break, well, I would love to hear from you. Well, what sort of pressure was brought to bear after you wrote the book?
Well, discredit mostly. They tried to say that I wasn't there. 3 people in the room, one a very close old friend. And I think mostly it was they didn't argue so much over the wounds, since we all said the same thing. But they just tried to discredit me in every way.
Well, don't you think that they probably were under a certain amount of pressure as well?
I don't think there's any question about that.
You did do a couple of television programs, though. I think I saw you once. Was it 2020 or 60
yes,
Minutes?
2020.
All right, fine. Well, we've got Selma Caller on the line here, and we only got trouble with doing this. It's, you know, I'm not a professional radio. I just gave up my surgery this last year, but I have to sort of watch the clock and try to keep everything moving. So let's just see who we have here. Hi, who do we have?
Mary.
Okay, do you have a question or comment?
Larry, yeah, this is Larry from Salinas.
Yes, Larry, do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I was just wondering if that Oliver Stone movie really was fairly close to the situation that happened, or if that was just media.
Could you repeat that again?
Well, the question is, do you think that Oliver Stone's movie was pretty much what happened, or was this just simply a story?
Well, that would be mere speculation on my part, because all I can tell you is the medical cover-up, the changes there. And I did not study the Kennedy assassination until, for the last 4 years. Now, my co-author, Gary Shaw, believes that it certainly could have happened in this manner, and he studied the Kennedy assassination for 27 years. So I would have to defer to his thoughts there, but I personally can only talk about the medical part of it, the aspects of the wounds that have disappeared or changed.
All right. Now, I think that... Thank you so much, Larry. Do you have any other question or comment?
I'm interested in this topic. I just... the idea of the government covering things up is... you know, people that I work with just don't believe it.
Well, you start listening to Radio Liberty here every afternoon.
I do.
And you can tape our programs and you can pass them out. And if you can't convince them, why, they're beyond any hope.
Yes.
Okay, fine. Thanks so much for calling.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. Well, we're a fairly new program here. We've only been on for a few weeks. Actually, I do a program every evening from 8 to 10, but this is the first commercial venture that we've had. Hopefully, we will be able to make this a success, and we'd like to get on a satellite and bring these facts out all across the country, because I think the American public needs to know that something's going on behind the scenes, especially if you can cover up something as important as the assassination of the President of the United States. Well, we're going to have to take one more commercial venture, and then we'll be back right after the news for a finishing up. This is Dr. Stan back here on Radio Liberty. Our telephone number in Santa Cruz, 464-8295, and anywhere else within the reach of our voice, 1-800-5-TALK-TO-YOU, 1-800-5-8255-28. And so let's go to Betty here in Watsonville. Hi, Betty.
Hi, I have a question. Dr. Crenshaw, didn't, when you were on 2020, go into the, where they wouldn't let cameras in, for the Kennedy, whatever they have, for his the pictures, and say that the pictures you saw there was the same way he was when he was at the hospital?
The question, did you get the question?
No, I'm sorry.
The question was, did you say that the pictures that you saw of the autopsy were the same as at the hospital, but you said they really weren't. They were entirely different.
They were totally different. In the pictures of the rear of the president's head, there was no defect whatsoever. And 29 people, including some of those at Bethesda, have described the hole in the back of the head, the occipital parietal. If you touch the back of your head, that bone was blasted out. It was the size of my wrist. There was no bone there, hair, and the cerebrum and cerebellum had been pushing out, and the cerebellum was present in the bottom of the wound. There was no defect in the wounds that I saw from the autopsy, and the tracheostomy wounds had been changed completely.
All right, Betty, did you get the answer?
Yeah, I did. It's just kind of confusing because what I saw in 2020 isn't what he's saying right now.
Well, it sure sounds like that I remember what he said on 2020. Thank you so much. Hi, Jeff.
Yeah, hi, Doctor. Very good show. The question I have, the shot that Ruby gave Oswald, was that placed in the most damaging spot where it would almost die instantly or is no recovery?
Well, I don't know whether he measured or not, but it was the damnedest wound I've ever seen. It went in on the left, through the lung, causing a pneumothorax. It went through the spleen. It then hit the major artery in the abdomen called the aorta, went through that, then through the major vein in the abdomen called the inferior vena cava, then hit the right kidney, and then came completely through the liver. It was subcutaneous on the right. So as we say at Parkland, it was a shish kebab. Well, it hit everything almost in the abdomen, including small bowel and large bowel. So this bullet the size of a thimble hit everything.
Now, is this the bullet that went into the neck that you're describing?
No, this was the bullet in Oswald.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, fine. I'm sorry.
That Ruby put in.
Okay. And so there was really no way that you could have saved him?
No. Well, I think technically if we'd have the EMS systems that we talked about briefly, the things that we did in the emergency room could have been done there at the Dallas Police. He could have had IVs, endotracheal tubes. He could have had some circulation. And we would have had a chance. Now, surgically, all of the injuries he sustained were amenable to our methods back then. But he had been 27 minutes without circulation when he left the Dallas Police and got to Parkland.
Mm.
And so he really died of hemorrhagic shock, the buildup of acidosis, and the complications thereof.
Well, now, how far is the Dallas Police Station from Parkland?
Oh, it's about 15, 14 miles. But the problem was where they had old hearses that they put in used as ambulances. had a bottle of oxygen and an ambu bag, and that was it.
Well, it's not like it is today where they really have very sophisticated...
That's what I'm saying. If we had them today, the things that we did in the Parkland emergency room could have been right there at the police station.
Sure, and they would have had IVs going on him by the time he hit the emergency room.
Exactly. He would have had some circulation, and we'd have had a great chance.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, do you have any other question or comment?
What caliber was the gun that killed Oswald?
38.
A 38. And you assumed that President Kennedy was alive when you started the operation on him when
That becomes philosophical. He was breathing agonally, but breathing.
Huh.
He had a heartbeat, but he had no blood pressure and no pulse.
And the other thing is, Jeff, you know, when your brain is gone, a wound of that magnitude, you're not going to survive no matter what the doctors do.
Yeah. Okay, doctor.
No
great show. Great people.
President Kennedy.
Okay, fine. Thanks so much, Jeff. And for Betty, who called a little earlier, I can only recommend that you read the book, JFK Conspiracy of Silence. It's available, and if you'd like to call us after the radio program, we'll give you the address where you can get this out of Dallas, out of the Dallas JFK Center. And you'll get the whole story exactly as Dr. Crenshaw had written it and exactly as he told it to us today. And I saw that on 2020, and I don't know... Do you see the program, the 2020 rebroadcast after you'd done it?
Yes.
And they basically, they didn't edit out or change it at all?
They changed some things, but they always going to do that.
Yeah, they sure are, in fact. a couple of times I've said I'm never going to do another tape program, and then I always end up doing it. We did the Jane Whitney program here about, 4 or 5, I guess it was last June, and they've shown it 2 or 3 times. And even though it was taped, all in all, it came through pretty well. Because here we were talking about the AIDS epidemic, not something of this magnitude. Well, of course, when the Oliver Stone film came out, it was amazing to me that every major means of communication attacked Oliver Stone.
Yes.
Every one of the major three networks, every one of the newspapers, whether they were conservative or liberal, I don't think, other than perhaps a little of the really fringe, you might call it fringe, but the really conservative or patriotic publications, other than that, everybody attacked Oliver Stone and vilified him. And all I can say is, if this really was a cover-up, then you begin to realize how powerful the forces are on the other side, and anybody who dares to speak up will be discredited. I think Oliver Stone was strong enough not to be hurt by that.
No, and I would say one thing. Through the book tour, I was 6 weeks throughout this country, and it was running 8.5, 9 to 1 as far as believing that there was a cover-up. I do not know why our nation did not pick up on this quicker. And through that book tour, we supported the Bourne-Stokes resolution, which, of course, is to open all of the files of the different CIA, Secret Service, etc., so that we can go over the paper trails. Now, maybe they're sanitized, but there's a lot of people who make mistakes. And to my knowledge, Clinton Bush signed the bill, but the 5 proctors that were supposed to review everything have not been completed as far as picked yet.
Well, I did see a fascinating article. It was only in the Washington Times, and I had it about a month ago. It was a CIA report that quoted Lyndon Johnson as saying that he felt the CIA was involved. Whether that was the case or not, I don't know.
Yes.
But anyway, that came out the Washington Times and completely censored by all the rest of the media.
Yes, that's very true.
How many copies of your book did get out?
I think it's over 1 million.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's amazing. You know, I only picked this up when I went to Dallas. I had heard of you before, and I remember seeing you on television at one time. But I think it's amazing that 1 million people have bought copies of that book. And Betty, if you're listening over in Watsonville and you want to know how to get hold of the book, why, give us a call here, 464-8295, right after the program, and we'll be glad to give you the address, because I think you want to read what Dr. Crenshaw said, and as I say, that's exactly what we're hearing here today. Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us. It's been a fascinating hour. It goes by very, very quickly. Is there anything you'd like to say in conclusion here?
No, I want to thank you for the opportunity, and I hope that California will recover from your devastating earthquake.
Well, I'm sure we'll recover from the earthquake. I hope we can recover from the effects of the assassination which really changed the direction of America forever.
Completely.
It sure did. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And this is Dr. Stan here on Radio Liberty. If you have a call, oh, we have a caller coming in. And I'm sorry Dr. Crenshaw's gone, but we'll be glad to talk to you. We've only got a little over 2 minutes left. Oh, we've lost them. I guess they hung up. Well, this is a story which we'll be talking to you more about, the assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy, why it happened. And I will tell you my personal view. First of all, there was the Warren Commission. Now, you would think that if there was a question of the CIA's involvement, you would not get the former director of the Central Intelligence Agency to be on the committee. You would not take three people from an organization we refer to as the Network to make up three of the seven members of the Warren Commission, and that was John McCloy, Alan Dulles, and Gerald Ford. Alan Dulles and John McCloy were members of the Council on Foreign Relations. Gerald Ford was a member of the Bilderberger. He was rewarded by becoming President of the United States. Senator Russell, and for those of you who remember the film JFK, Senator Russell was on the film, was on the airplane with Jim Garrison, and told him that he believed that there was a conspiracy. Senator Russell was actually on that, or either Russell or Long, I've forgotten which one, but he was on the committee, and he always believed there was a conspiracy behind the assassination. I think anybody who has ever studied the background of the assassination realizes that the magic bullet does not go through President Kennedy, Governor Connally's back, break his ribs, break his wrist, leave bony fragments and leave bullet fragments in the wrist, leave bullet fragments in the leg, and come out in pristine condition. And of course, this is the greatest cover-up of all time. But the fact that they've been able to conceal the true facts from the American public for so many years gives you an idea of the degree of control that exists over the American people think. And so it is that you'll want to stay listening to Radio Liberty here. Tell five of your friends every day to be sure to tune in, because you're going to get the story behind the story, the news behind the news. Because if we don't wake up as a nation, we're going to lose our freedom.